Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He has picked these films for me. He joins us weekly. The films he has picked for me and their titles are Her Smell, High Life, and Peterloo. I have no further comment. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So how are you doing this week?
I'm just so delighted. I can't even stop. So
because I pick these films for you. Other people pick you posies, but I pick you movies.
That's right.
Oh, well, that's all I'm good for. But hey, we got three interesting ones this week. Not all great, but interesting. And I have to say, a movie called Her Smell. You just have to see that for the title alone, at least if you're me. But I would have seen it anyway. Written and directed by Alex Ross Perry, an interesting filmmaker who has worked before with Elizabeth Moss. And Elizabeth Moss is probably the factor that will bring people, those people who do go to see Her Smell. It is probably the presence of Elizabeth Moss which will bring them there. She, of course, just burst upon the scene, so to speak, in the mostly excellent TV series Mad Men, where she played the young woman of the office. And since then, she's gone on. You know, a lot of people don't very successfully make that transition from the smaller screen to the larger screen, but she has done it very, very well. She's all over the place. I recently have been watching her in all of the so far extant episodes of The Handmaid's Tale, which is a pretty good series. You know, flawed, but you know, it has its points. Just when I thought, oh, I'm not to wait to the next season to come out, which is happening very soon, to see more Elizabeth Moss, then along comes Her Smell. I find that I'm not going to say a little of her goes a long way, but after a while I do find I don't really need to see her anymore for a while, and yet she's sort of omnipresent, so I end up seeing her anyway. And that's kind of what happened with Her Smell. In Her Smell, she gives a phenomenal performance. It's absolutely amazing for sheer energy, if nothing else. She plays a punk rocker. Boy, oh boy, punk rock came along in the 70s, and then I thought it had gone away after a while, but it never really did. And here she plays a punk rocker who kind of made it apparently during the 90s, but she has been on the decline in recent years, this punk rocker whose name is Becky. She is in not only professional decline, but personal decline. And it's, you know, you guessed it, it's the usual stuff that tends to afflict rock and roll stars, even minor ones like Becky apparently was, drink and drugs and all that stuff. And she is really out of control at the beginning of this movie. And she stays out of control during a good part of it. And she ruins one thing after another. She ruins her recording contract. She ruins her concert tour that's coming up. She ruins one thing and another. She ruins her relationship with the people who work with her and support her and help her and with whom she really can't survive in the business. So then that all happens in an extremely chaotic way for about, the movie's pretty long, it's well over 2 hours, for maybe about an hour and a half. And then suddenly everything changes. The mood changes, the tone changes in the movie. She is brought low. She goes into rehab. She is living alone out in the country. She is now way under control and melancholy and mournful. And the movie, again, really changes tone, becomes very quiet and subdued, and I think less interesting. And then it finally wends its way toward a conclusion. So I said that the thing that will bring most people to see Her Smell is the work of Elizabeth Moss, but I have to say I was at least equally impressed with the work of Alex Ross Perry, a very, very interesting director who has worked with Elizabeth Moss before. And this movie is really cinematic. It uses very, very close-in camera work, especially during that really chaotic, over-the-top wildness, approximately hour and a half of it. The camera's very close. The camera's moving incessantly. The editing is happening when you don't expect it instead of when you do expect it. And it's a very, very cinematic movie, a real visual adventure in a lot of ways. After a while, well, it certainly is very confusing. The dialogue is very sort of hard to keep up with sometimes. People yelling and screaming and squawking at each other all the time, until it goes into that quieter period when it gets kind of a lot less interesting. But I found it mostly compelling to watch all the way through, a real sort of, again, adventure for the eyes and the ears. If you're not into the punk scene and don't want to see it at its sort of most ferocious ebb, then this is a movie to stay away from. But if you're interested in Elizabeth Moss, if you're interested in the rock and roll scene, the punk scene, the problems that it brings in so many movies and in so many lives, Her Smell is a really, really interesting movie. And my hat is off, as before, with Alex Ross Perry for just doing some real adventurous cinema here. It's a movie that I found quite exciting to watch in a lot of ways. Our second film, High Life, is from a very, very important director, the French director Claire Denis. And she's made a whole lot of movies, and she's a very illustrious French filmmaker, and her films often get to America on the sort of art movie circuit. But High Life is very different for Claire Denis in a couple of ways. One way is that it is in the English language. This is her first English language movie. And the second way is that it is a science fiction film. And Claire Denis tends to make very intimate movies, movies about intimate relationships, intimate lives, and so forth. And High Life is actually that too, but it is in a science fiction context. We have here a spaceship which is hurtling its way through the cosmos, and it has on board a very small crew, and that is why I said, even though it's a science fiction film, it is another very intimate Claire Denis film. It's another one of these movies that we've had over the years every now and then, a movie which is not really populating with lots and lots of people like a Star Wars film, but which has a very small and concentrated sort of cast of characters. The movie is very different from, but in that way resembles, movies like Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey or Douglas Trumbull's Silent Running from many years ago. A very intimate movie. So on this this spaceship hurtling through the cosmos, we have mainly, I guess you'd call him an astronaut, played by Robert Pattinson, whose name is Monty. And he is at the beginning of the film and at the end of the film alone with his daughter. And at the beginning of the film, she's just a little baby. And then later on, by the end of the film, she's grown somewhat older. However, the movie is not the story is not related in chronological order, so we are constantly jumping around in time and in space because we have flashbacks back to the Earth. We have flashbacks to an earlier stage of this space voyage when there were several people, quite a few people involved in it and on board. And as so often happens in these movies, something happens. Yeah, something happens. And eventually there's nobody left but Robert Pattinson and his daughter. But again, the movie is always jumping around in time, so you have to pay pretty close attention or your schema of things will get jumbled. And gradually we are able to put together various pieces. The head of this whole project was a scientist named Dibbs, played by Juliette Binoche, another very gifted actress. And she was in charge of this whole thing, and the story has to do with this journey through space, which is a sort of a cosmic experiment on its way to a black hole to try to tap into some energy there. There is also a whole lot of experimentation going on with artificial insemination and an attempt to keep the sort of generations of this space project alive. And anyway, again, there's a whole lot that's going on, so much that it might, in fact, be challenging to keep up with if it were all told in chronological order and without a whole lot of jumps back to Earth, etc. And being told in this very achronological way, it becomes all the more challenging to keep up with. So it's a movie that is really like a kind of a jigsaw puzzle, and you have to kind of put the pieces together. One thing that helps you to do that is, again, the fact that there's a limited number of people involved in all of this. And we get various intrigues and various episodes, some of them quite violent, that involve when there was a larger crew on the spaceship. We get the very complex relationships between the scientist Dibbs and people who are sort of under her in this whole enterprise. And you got to put it all together in your own head as you're watching it. Now, I respect Claire Denis' filmmaking. I used to know her a little bit years ago. I respect it enormously. She's a wonderful filmmaker, and she's so prolific that, you know, some of her movies are better than others. I did not find High Life to be one of her very greatest films. I really didn't. A lot of critics are giving ecstatic reviews. It is kind of static in certain ways, which is interesting, I think, given the subject matter. And it is, you know, it is very complex, and putting together the pieces in your head while at the same time you're engaging with the emotions of the film is something of a challenge. But mainly, it's a really provocative and ambitious filmmaking experiment that just doesn't quite work in the long run. So if you're putting together the jigsaw puzzle of Claire Denis' many films over the years, which are very, very different, she's a very versatile filmmaker, High Life, you know, is a fascinating piece, and it expands her talent in certain ways that are very interesting. I think one reason why I didn't respond to it as enthusiastically as a lot of critics is that Robert Pattinson just, I don't think his performance is very interesting at all. Very stolid and down to earth, and in that way sort of interesting in a science fiction movie, but it doesn't really make it. Overall, the movie, again, a fascinating experiment. If you want to see something that's really different, if you're really into science fiction and you want to see a distinctive twist on the genre, then go see this movie. Otherwise, maybe wait for Claire's next movie. She's a phenomenal filmmaker. This doesn't stand with her very best work. Speaking of phenomenal filmmakers who are not doing their very best work lately, Mike Leigh is a wonderful, wonderful British filmmaker who has made a long, long list of films, some of which deserve the status of classics. Movies like Naked that came out in the early 90s, Topsy Turvy, which was this wonderful movie about Gilbert and Sullivan, various others. He has made any number of wonderful, wonderful films. I used to know Mike years ago, did some work with him as a critic. But Peterloo, his new movie, is just not his very best film. Mike has a distinctive way, historically, of putting his movies together, which is to say, it always says written and directed by Mike Leigh, almost always says that, but he works very closely, allows a huge creative contribution from his cast. He does improvisations with the incredibly gifted cast members who he assembles. And then he watches and guides and shapes those improvisations, chooses the parts that are working along the way, and then he assembles this into a screenplay, which ultimately appears under his byline. But in fact, he's worked it out in improvisations with his cast. I think Peterloo was assembled in a different way, because it's a very different kind of movie from what he usually does. He has done before, occasionally, historical drama. In this case, it's a fairly large-scale historical drama, and what it deals with is an incident that took place in Britain back in 1819, when there was a very large-scale labor movement going on in Manchester in England, in northern England, and the people were protesting huge economic inequities that were going on. You know, not unlike our situation nowadays, which I'm sure Mike Leigh is very, very much had in his mind when he put this movie together. Economic inequities, political inequities, taxation without representation, things like this. So a whole lot of ordinary citizens got together and put together with some leaders a very powerful labor movement, and they planned a huge peaceful mass rally in a square called St. Peter's Square in Peterloo, and British forces, military and security forces, attacked it violently, and it turned into a massacre. And since all of this was not too long after the Battle of Waterloo, in which Napoleon was defeated, it came to be known as the Massacre of Peterloo, and so that's where the title comes from. Now, the thing about Peterloo is, first of all, it's a historical epic, so I don't think it was put together in the same improvisatory way that Mike Leigh's films are normally put together in. But also, it's a very talky and preachy film. I think Mike Leigh, who is a very politically minded filmmaker and always has been, has very much in mind the parallels between Peterloo back in 1819, which after all is just 100 years ago, and the people's rightful demand for more political and economic equality, and what's going on in today's Britain and in today's America and in a lot of places today where we have a whole lot of inequity and a whole lot of political dissatisfaction. So I think he was very much in mind of that. So when assembling Peterloo, what he has a lot of this movie is people having discussions or people giving speeches where they enunciate their political, ideological, socioeconomic points of view. I don't think Mike has ever made a talkier film. People talking, preaching, speeching. And after a while, for a movie that is over 2.5 hours long, it just becomes too much. It is beautifully filmed by Mike Lee's regular cinematographer, Dick Pope. It's a fabulous-looking movie. It has a wonderful cast with people like Rory Kinnear and Maxine Peake and a number of others. And it's a very well-meaning work, and at times it's a very moving work, and I respect Mike Lee's filmmaking to the skies. But I have to say, after a while, I just thought, what we need here is more emotion, more inwardness, more introspection, and less outward, preachy, talky, speechy stuff. So Peter Liu is Mike Lee, not at his very best. It's a movie I hope people see for its political messages alone, but I can't say it quite reaches the highest level of Mike Lee's work, the same way as High Life doesn't reach the highest level of Claire Denis' work. I'm delighted to see these filmmakers stretching their creative talents, but I can't say their experiments work as well as they would hope to. So that is my story this week, Jill, which I deliver with somewhat mixed emotions.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Her Smell, High Life, and Peter Liu.